Browsing your local newsstand at times, it's tempting to believe that almost all magazines are focused on a younger demographic. But not so. Today we meet the editor of a publication aimed squarely at a more mature but definitely no less savvy readership. Plus the best design and lifestyle stories out of the Czech Republic and Central Europe, and a handsome new lens on Hamburg. That's all today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, with me, Tom Edwards. Coming up on the show, a closer look at Mittel Europa. We'll speak to the editors of a brace of publications from Hamburg and Prague. But first, The Oldie was established in 1992 by former Private Eye editor Richard Ingrams. It set out to willfully rub up against youth culture and engage a sophisticated, maybe older audience with a sense of humour. It's executed this mission with panache ever since, winning over many younger readers too in the process. Indeed, the magazine's current editor, Harry Mount, took over earlier this year at a mere 45 years young. Harry Mount, welcome to The Stack. Very good to have you with us. Now, let's talk about The Oldie. You've been in the big chair there, what, about...
Coming up to six months.
How's it been treating you? That's my opening gambit.
Well, I would say this, wouldn't I? But no, extremely well. And it's very, very relaxed office. And it reminds me of how I imagine newspaper offices were in the 70s. My dad's a journalist, and so I sort of heard tales of newspapers and magazines in the 70s. And it has that relaxed but not lazy approach, and just, you know, amusing and amused. So it's a wonderful place to work.
A bit like that sort of toward the end of the morning
vibe.
Exactly.
Yeah, Brady's exactly. Have a book about journalism.
That wasn't why I went into newspapers. Yeah. Well, maybe it was. That strikes me as interesting. So is that about striking an attitude? Is that about trying to imbue that sense on your colleagues and people who write for the magazine? Or do you think rather actually people who are like-minded tend to sort of coalesce around similar projects?
I think the latter, and then also a huge amount of it is because of my two predecessors, the great Richard Ingrams, obviously, the former editor of Private Eye, who was editor of The Oldie for 22 years, and then the sadly late, much lamented Alexander Chancellor, who was another of my journalistic heroes, who was only editor of the magazine for 3 years, sadly, until his death in January this year, but he had been the completely groundbreaking editor of The Spectator in the 70s and early 80s. And I think their spirit lives on, that idea of basically in articles you've got to be either amusing, interesting, or sad. Quite straightforward, isn't it? And they both have, or in Alexander's case, had an inbuilt boredom detector. We all know lots of articles you start reading because you feel you ought to, and just the mind shuts down. And the greatest articles in whatever magazine or paper are those where you don't really notice you're reading.
Do you think that that's an art? I mean, people talk about, you know, the death of print. We don't subscribe to that. People also talk about, though, the loss of some of the great art of great journalism. And they point to things like, oh, well, you know, the democratizing power of the internet. Everyone can be their own journalist. Everyone can be their own editor. Yeah. That's always alarmed me somewhat, because I think I subscribe to that slightly, I guess some would say, rather old-fashioned view of the industry. Yeah. Do you worry about that? And do you see, I don't know, in sort of next generation of journalists, that there's not the same, that same sensibility that you've described?
I think it's always been quite a rare quality. So before Alexander Chancellor turned up at The Spectator in 1975, it was a fantastically boring magazine. So it wasn't like all magazines have always been interesting until, you know, recent days. I think it's a very rare quality having that boredom detector, as I referred it to as. And then I think two things have been going on, that as we all know, newspapers have been declining. And I think one of the problems is, because they're terrified of being a bit odd or esoteric, they all rush into the middle ground. Mm. And so a lot of them, not all of them, have become duller, whereas magazines, which as we know, I'm sure you talk about a lot, are really holding up their circulation very well. The Oldie, Private Eye and Spectator, all at record levels, because they've had the confidence to realise that there are still a lot of extremely intelligent people out there who love amusing, interesting, sad articles. So I don't subscribe to the gloom and doom model of magazine publishing.
This is the upbeat note that we like to strike. And on that point about broadcasting a voice of confidence, and you mentioned there this feeling of sort of taking a chair, a very hallowed chair from other great journalists, I don't know, is that a balancing act for you to balance the authoritative voice of the oldie that its regular readers and potentially new readers are familiar with your own journalistic sort of instincts and your own editorial approach? Or, again, do you find that there's generally sort of alignment between those two?
Actually, it's a combination of the two. So literally half the magazine is regular columnists. Many have been there since 1992, when the magazine started 25 years ago. And then the first half is features, which I largely commission, and in the same spirit as Alexander and Richard. And the only thing I might humbly add, filling these great shoes, is that I might know a few more people my age. I'm 45, Alexander was 77 when he died, and Richard Ingram's about to be 80 next month. And so it's not like I'm going to start commissioning articles on rap, although actually we've got a very good column, which is what was something in the old days and what is something today, and we've got one on what is grime in the September issue coming up. So all I could do is actually expand the amount of people writing for it, some of the journalists that I've worked with or people I was at university with. So they bring exactly the same outlook, which is to be amused and amusing and interesting and sad and all the rest of it. But it's just having a slightly larger pool of people I know while also using those fantastic journalists that Richard and Alexander used.
What then does that tell us about your view of what your demographic is on the magazine and what your demographic could be? I mean, it's obviously unashamedly targeting, you know, a more mature reader, in years, maybe just in mindset. How do you, I don't know, do you talk to people about what your reader is, what your ideal reader might be? Do those two things look different?
They sort of overlap. And so at the moment, it is true that the average reader is largely from London and the Southeast and are in their 60s and 70s. We have quite a few readers in their 90s, and we also have readers, not so many, but some readers in their 20s, and then it goes up 30s, 40s, 50s. And I'd really like to expand those younger readers. The name itself can be a bit confusing because it's not, the odd article is about being old or aimed at older people, but actually it's a bit like a Spectator or a Private Eye without the politics, you might say. We don't have too much politics. And so there are very few things in there which a 20-year-old won't get. And in fact, there's a work experience girl from university working at the Aldi this morning who's 19, who said, I think honestly, said how much she'd enjoyed it. And so I'd really like to extend it to a larger age group. But that's not a question of actually changing the content too much. It's just getting people to know that it is aimed at all age groups. What James Pembroke, the publisher, has done very well is through these deals, which The Spectator is doing as well, of £1 an issue for a year, so £12 for a year. You get people buying it for practically nothing, and then a lot of them hold on to it and take out the full price subscription. So it's getting it out there, and when people read it, they realise it extends beyond all age groups.
And I suppose that's about having that confidence in your editorial vision and in this authority, which is very important, as you said. It's all well and good talking about that, though, but I guess in the end, the publisher and everyone else wants to see bottom line. They want to look at the ABCs. And that's obviously a good story for the oldie, which is convenient.
Yeah.
Do you think there's an impatience or an unwillingness from in some sections of the publishing world to give things time and to build up that authority? Because not everyone can jump in and say, well, look, ours is a great story of growth in readership, you know, year on year. Sometimes it takes a bit of a punt.
Yeah.
It's understandable that people won't do that. Do you think people are too reticent? Does that worry you?
I think certainly not the oldie, but I suppose it depends where you are on the cycle. So the oldie was selling 20,000 odd copies about 15, 20 years ago. It now sells 46,000 copies. So if you're on an upward climb, then I think you can afford to be patient, and it's making money. I could see with those huge papers, which you know sold in these huge quantities, and they're all declining, then sometimes proprietors get into a panic and throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think actually I used to work at the Daily Mail, and Paul Dacre has been a staggeringly good editor there. And one of the reasons he's so good is he's been allowed to stay there for, I think, almost 20 years now. And so there's real confidence in his brilliance as a newspaper man. It's quite like football clubs. You know that when a club sacks a manager, then hires another one, doesn't do too well after two games, sacks them, the third man's going to be highly unlikely to suddenly produce a series of hits.
If you can get anyone good, which you probably can't. Yeah. Just on that point about newspapers, before we talk a bit about some of the mags you've brought in, which you've already mentioned some of them, do you think that there is a, if not a vacuum, there's space for other periodicals to get into which the contraction of the newspaper market leaves. Is there an opportunity there for journals like The Oldie to maybe not steal newspaper readers, yeah, but to convince some of those people to maybe change the pace of the way they're consuming the
media? I think there certainly is, and obviously the big example of this is The Week, isn't it, which I remember being a brilliant predictor of these things, saying it wouldn't last more than a week because I obsessively read the papers all day. I'm a newspaper addict. So I thought people who like reading papers, but actually I was wrong about that. That's done fantastically well. And actually, it's not one of the ones I brought in, but I think the Idler magazine, which I adore, that's gone up 3 times its circulation on the newsstand over the last year. And I think there is this desire for a longer read and more considered thought, particularly as the newspapers, not all of them, but a lot of them wrongly, as I say, are hurrying to the middle ground and trying to imitate BuzzFeed and put together lists and all the rest of it, that people do like a read.
On that note, let's look at the titles that are spread before us on the table here in Studio One. We have a recent oldie. We've got Private Eye, which we've mentioned, Spectator 2, and Catholic Herald. Yeah. I wonder, first of all, Harry, is there a thread that runs through the titles that you've brought, or do they each sort of sing a different note that appeals to you?
There is a thread, and I only thought this because I read all four, but actually I think they all share an amused, ironic, slightly cynical, satirical approach to life.
A raised editorial eyebrow,
yeah,
if you
exactly.
will.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that's what I really, really adore. It doesn't necessarily constantly have to be funny, in a lot of serious articles in all these four magazines, but to be amused and given a slightly sideways look at things is what I'd pay for.
Tell me a little bit about Harry's at the Newsstand, the array of titles, almost limitless. What informs your reading habits, especially if you're, I don't know, are you a perennial sampler of new publications? Are you grabbed by an arresting front page image? Is it bylines? What sort of...
It's funny, I must be honest, in the office we get a lot of magazines and I always look through them, but I think in life we all do this, we build up generalisations, rightly or wrongly, and we think X magazine has always been boring. I will not read it, and that's...
You can name names if you want.
Yeah, right. I must say, I used to be the New York correspondent for The Telegraph, and although the American newspapers are more serious than ours, and more research goes into them, and journalists, rightly or wrongly, are treated with greater respect, they are much, much more boring. And so, if I see a New York Times lying around, I won't read it. If I see a New Yorker, which can have some fantastic pieces in it, but actually quite a lot of it I think is a bit earnest, but if it's on a subject I'm interested in, I think it's fantastic. So I'll graze like that. I suppose I probably subscribe to or read regularly, I don't know, 5 or 6 magazines a month, but then I'll cast my eye over the front of New York Review of Books or Literary Review or TLS. Actually, I'll graze through the whole of the TLS. But you have inbuilt habits about how much you'll read of a magazine. It'd be interesting. I don't think it varies that much.
Let's throw the lens forward a little. Yeah. What's coming up? I mean, I don't know whether you want to do any exclusive reveals, what we can look forward to in future oldies. What about your sort of broader plans? I mean, I often like to ask editors whether these days you need to be, if not part publisher, part managing editor as well, you certainly need to have maybe more commercial savvy than perhaps the very pure ideas of what being an editor was in days gone by. What's on the cards?
Well, in terms of features, we've got a fantastic doubleheader in November, so this is some way off, but that would have been the great Peter Cook's 80th birthday. And we've got a terrific article by Elizabeth Luard, who is the Oldies cookery correspondent, but she began life in 1963 working on Private Eye as a secretary, and her husband, Nick Luard, was the co-owner of the magazine. And she came across a whole stash of fantastic photos of the Establishment Club, the comedy club set up by Peter Cook in the early 60s, which haven't been published. So we're having this fantastic article and these great photos together there. And also, we've got a very moving piece by William Cook on Dudley Moore's last years, that we all know that he got ill, but he was taken in by a family of pianists in New Jersey. And this great film star spent his last days just playing the piano with this wonderful, clever family of pianists, and we've got photos of that. So that's something to look forward to in November. You're quite right about commercial add-ons that, as you know, readers build up this tremendous loyalty, I do, to their magazines. events actually are very popular and also make money. So we have an oldie lunch where three writers will come every month to Simpsons in the Strand, and you get a huge lunch. And oldies, in a very good way, like to a drink as well. And then at the end, three three speakers will give a talk. And then we also have oldie trips. I'm leading an oldie trip to Florence in the spring. And so I think there are just all sorts of ways that you obviously want to build up circulation, but also you extend, I don't like the word brand, but you extend the brand in the same style, with the same feeling, that amused, knowing, intelligent approach to things like lunches, trips, all the rest of it.
Often easier said than done, but I'm sure each and every one of these are a delight. Just before we go, Harry, I just want to ask you a bit more about some of your magazines. We talked in some detail about some, but Catholic Herald we slightly brushed over. Yeah. Tell me a bit more about this, because I'm not sure that that's been mentioned on the stack before.
Right.
Is there a specific, again, is it an editorial sensibility?
In an egomaniac way, I have written for the issue that I brought in, so that's not the reason.
That's quite allowed.
I'm not Catholic myself, but actually the man who's writing the cover story, Damon Thompson, is a great old friend of mine, used to work on The Telegraph and The Spectator, brilliant writer himself, and he's on the editorial team at the Catholic Herald. And so it's through him I started reading it. I know the editor, Luke Coppin, and even though I'm not Catholic, I'm sort of agnostic, Anglican, I suppose you might say, I'm very interested in church affairs. So the church aspect is very interesting, but also the people who write for it, particularly Stuart Reed and Mary Kenny, are in that same, who are both Catholic, but they both write in exactly that style I was referring to, knowing, measured, ironic, satirical. It might be on some quite precise Catholic news story, but because they write so well, it's all in the writing. You can write about, you know, the phone directory, and if you do it in an amused, funny, interesting way. So, as you'll know, there's quite a lot of churn between these various papers and magazines, so Mary Kenny has a column in The Oldie, in fact, and Stuart Reed used to be deputy editor of The Spectator. And I do think there's a sort of group of people who've just got it, who can write beautifully and amusingly, and they're fairly Catholic, small c, in their approach to who they'll write for. So it's quite a specialist magazine in that sense, particularly the first half, which will have Catholic news. But the second half has these terrific columns by some of my favourite writers.
Harry, a final thought. Yeah. People talk about, I mentioned briefly sort of fake news and this kind of question. We've got Donald Trump in the White House, for now at least. Can these great writers, particularly people you sort of follow regularly, can they help us all to write our way out of these ponderous political times? You know, authoritativeness, writers who are well-informed, but who are also witty and engaging. Yeah. It's never seemed more important. Do we have the support networks? Do we have enough things that are sufficiently robust commercially to get us out of, I don't know, choppy political water?
I think this group of journalists, I think, do, because they're not at the shouty end of the spectrum, which so often will have either someone attacking something too extremely or defending something because it's because of their own bias. I think that, I suppose, British cynicism means you're less likely to hate something unduly or to defend something too extremely. So I think it is it's a measured tone of voice which sometimes gets things wrong, but it's cynical about any complete new panaceas to things, and would obviously react to someone like Trump, in my own opinion, being this narcissist, but it won't do too much virtue signaling of saying, he's dreadful, he's disgusting, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. That thing of just being measured, I suppose, is a very important response to these extremist times.
To Prague now on the stack, the home of Sofa magazine, established in 2013 with the agenda of showcasing the best design and travel opportunities within the Czech Republic and Central Europe. It's since grown from a digital-only publication to a proper ink-on-paper magazine. Earlier, its editor, Adela Kurdunova, spoke to Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
Sofa is Czech magazine. It's an original Czech magazine. We launched the first issue in December 2013. And we started as online magazine because we just thought that this is the future of the magazines, because everyone was speaking about that the paper magazines are dead, that the future is in online and iPad world. But already after the first issue, people or the readers started writing about the paper version. After 1 year online, we launched our first printed issue. What's unique in a Czech context or maybe Central European context with SOFA is that we focus on original content. It means that we do all our photographs and illustrations by ourselves, or it's commissioned especially for SOFA, so we do not feature the same things as other Czech magazines. And we focus on the content from Czech Republic and Central Europe, so Poland, Slovak, Austria mainly. Of course, we do feature content from the other parts of the world, but the office we have here, and we are almost all of us are Czechs or Slovaks, so it's very natural for us to write about this region. At the same time, that's why we started writing so far in English from very beginning, because there is no other Czech magazine writing in English. So there is a lot of expats and foreigner people in Prague. We are proud of Czech culture, Czech handcraft, and the initial idea, and that's what we try to continue with, is to introduce Central European design to the rest of the world.
And how is it to make a magazine in the Czech Republic? Because to be honest, it's a market I don't know very well, but do you think there are perhaps editors like you, for example, that are saying, you know, we believe in print, there's a nice print scene in the country? Tell us a bit more about it.
Actually, we are very new type of magazine for this market. The market is very limited, of course, because Czech Republic is a small country in comparison to other countries. That's also why we started writing it or publishing it in English, because then the reader, you can reach more readers, of course. But otherwise, I think it's the process, how to make it, how to make the magazine, it's the same everywhere. Maybe it's somehow more difficult in terms of we have it kind of harder to reach the rest of the world from here, but otherwise I would say it's the same. But the people in the Czech Republic, the readers, they are not used to this type of magazine, like, I don't know, Serial, Kavana, Kinfolk, and so on. It came just 2 years ago, 3 years ago to the market, or became more popular. I would say maybe last year it became more popular here. So it's very new at the market, and it was hard, especially in terms of the advertising, because we had to struggle, especially the first year, a lot to convince the advertising partners and the other partners that this is the way the magazine world should go, that they should, you know, trust this type of the magazine. I would say that it's better and better with time, and after these 3.5 years we are on the market, I think we managed to get the good position on the market, even if it's hard still for us in comparison to other established magazines.
One thing I notice, every single issue there's a theme, and the theme of the latest issue is time.
This is our concept, that every issue has a theme or a topic, is dedicated to something. For example, we dedicated our issues to traditions. Last year we had Baroque as one of the themes. Then we had the elements, mystery, we had flowers, we had sport. And the latest issue is dedicated to time. Now we are working on the next issue, and it will be dedicated to music.
You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24. From Prague to Hamburg now. In fact, a whole magazine about the city. The second issue of Gentle Rain is out now after a successful first edition last year. The title is published by local media agency Die Brüder, founder of independent magazine conference Indicon. In the second issue, you will find out how Hamburg is trying to tame its wild east and what's at stake when you live on the banks of the Elbe. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Urs Spindler, one of the founders of the magazine.
I think the Salmon is definitely important because it's a bit more of a, yeah, it draws a little more attention than the color scheme we used before, so we are very happy with that. But I think what you also recognize is quite a famous painting. It's called, I think, Wanderer Above the Sea of Fog in English by the German artist Caspar David Friedrich. It's really an image people have in the back of their heads, and you see it, and you recognize it in many places. You recognize it in many Instagram images, maybe just this basic composition. So maybe that's also a reason why this resonates with you so much. And maybe also because it's also a reference to a picture of the Beatles that used to take some photographs exactly on this rooftop where we did this cover photo. So yeah, I think there's some reason behind why that works for you.
And I have to say, I did spot it already in a couple of newsagents in London. It's very tempting to go and get a copy. But let's talk about some of the stories in the second issue as well. I love that story about, I think it's the Chug Club in St. Pauli, which basically they want to invent a drink a day as well. And they're trying to change the bar culture in Hamburg.
Most of the stories really come from our own experiences. And again, it's one of the stories that comes from the experience of my colleague Malte that turned out to be one of the most interesting features in there. The thing is, most of the people we portray, they do something differently. That's like one of the basic things we require to get someone in the magazine. So, for example, there's Johann Scherer, who does an analog recording studio. Or there's, for example, Betty Kupser, who decided not to run a cocktail bar on two or three popular drinks, but to say, okay, I want to bring something more to people. I'm going to invent a new taste, a new flavor every day. So, yeah, that's basically the way we try to, the kind of stories we try to find.
I would like to talk about what's interesting about Gentle Rain as well, because you work fairly close to the Hamburg metropolitan region as well. So how does it work? How does your revenue come? What's the business model? Is it advertising or is those supporters that are actually helping the magazine?
I mean, we try to be quite transparent with that. As you see in the middle of the magazine, there's mm-hmm. a section where we list the people who are involved in making it. So involved in making it in this turn, in the second issue, basically mean they bought space there, but they are not just any company. They have something to do with the values basically Gentle Rain stands for. So that's how we search for our advertisers. We search for people who are somehow compatible with what we want to do and with what message we want to get out there. And all in all, the magazine right now is basically, I think the funding is basically 50-50 from the ads and from what it has to earn in the end at the newsstand.
I want to talk to you about something else as well, besides the beautiful product that is Gentle Rain. At the end of August, it's of course time for Indicon, this time in Hamburg. What can you tell us about the event this year?
It's actually the fourth time we do Indicon now, so it has been around for a while. But I think it's more relevant than ever because, I mean, we all know we live in a difficult time. We have a lot of political turmoil all over the world. And we try to find out what independent publishing and what small and not so small publications can do, for example, when you're confronted with topics like Brexit, with the crisis in Turkey, with other issues that are present right now. We think that independent publishing is always, it's a very good seismograph, a means to measure topics that are important if you see new magazines appear. And that's what we're going to try to think about and talk about a bit at Indicon this year.
And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our busy producers, Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Henry Rhys Sheridan, and to our editor, Cassie Galpin. Comments or queries are always welcome. Fernando can be found at fp@monocle.com. He's hungry for emails. Do send him some. If you fancy buying any of the titles mentioned, get them at your favourite local newsstand or visit Monocle's own Kiosk Cafe just by Paddington, a stone's throw from here at Midori House. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you very much for listening.